Thanks for checking out our weekly podcast. Our mission at Grace is to help people worship God, connect to others, and serve both. We hope that you'll be blessed and encouraged by this week's message. For more information about Grace, you can follow us on Facebook or check out our website at experiencegrace.church. We told you last week that we would make a big announcement today, and I've decided I don't want to make that announcement, so I'm not going to. And I'm just kidding. I'll let you know what it is, but let's go and take our Bibles and open the book of Philemon, Philemon chapter 1. If you're not sure where that is, it's in the New Testament near the very back, right before the book of Hebrews. So Philemon is where we're going to be. And if you weren't sure where the book of Philemon is, that's okay, because I have an easier question for you right now. Do you know who this person is right here? Philemon. Yeah. Not Philemon, all right? Anybody know who that is? Michael Jordan. I grew up loving Michael Jordan. Like, I had posters all over my room. How many of you guys used to have posters in your room? Anybody used to have posters in there? I had Michael Jordan posters in my room. And as a matter of fact, I looked for one of them online and I found it right there. I used to have that poster in my room. Anybody used to have that poster right there? It's from the dunk competition back in the day, and it was awesome. I love Michael Jordan. One of the interesting things about Mike is that he was drafted in 1984 from the North Carolina Tar Heels, and he was the third draft pick to the Chicago Bulls in 1984. He was a superstar right from the very beginning. 1985, 1986, 1987, 88, and 89. The first 5 years that he competed, he was a superstar. He did amazing things, except for one thing. He never won what? Never won a championship. He never won a championship the first 5 years. He set records. He was a scoring leader, all those different kinds of things. He did an amazing job. He was a superstar, but he never won championships. But there was something that happened around the end of that fifth year. There was a guy that came along. His name was Phil Jackson. Anybody ever heard of Phil Jackson before? For those of you that are maybe millennials, he coached the Lakers, which you might be familiar with that. But before he coached the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, he coached the Chicago Bulls. He instituted the triangle offense, and his biggest achievement was he convinced Michael Jordan that he needed to become a team player. As a matter of fact, the first 5 years, they said that Michael wouldn't hardly hang out with the other players on the team. He would always hang out with his friends and groupies and people that came around, and he was just not a team player. He was a ball hog right from the very beginning. He didn't like to pass. He was very mean and short with the other players and things like that. But Phil Jackson comes along and he says, Mike, you're going to be a great superstar, but you're never going to win championships until something changes and you become a team player. Well, he convinced him of it. He convinced him he needed to do it. And so when he began to become a team player in 1990, for the 1990 and 91 season, they won the championship in 91. They won the championship in 92. They won the championship in 93. Three seasons in a row. How many of you guys lived those days out? You remember those days, three-peating? Some of you right now are about to stand up and cheer because it was like, yes, that was awesome, you know? After the third championship in a row, his father had passed away, and his father had encouraged him to pursue his dreams. So at a young age, he retired from the NBA and went to play baseball. He played baseball for about 17 months, and then after 17 months, he sent a two-word fax to the Associated Press. Fax. Fax is this old-school thing where they, like, sent. You guys know what a fax is? Like, all right, how many of you guys remember faxes? Anyone ever ask you to send a fax nowadays? You know, if someone asks you to send a fax, just ask them, hey, can I just write it in stone and send it over that way? You know, like, come on, I can email it, right? Anyway, he sends a two-word fax, and it was, he went Arnold Schwarzenegger on him. He said, I'm back. That was it. I'm back. And he came back. And Michael Jordan went after 17 months of playing baseball. He came back, and he won the championship in 1996, in 1997, and 1998. Two three-peat championships in a row. Six seasons of playing, six seasons of championships. Michael Jordan was born with talent, but his talent was not enough for him to win a championship. He needed the help of other people. One of the people that helped him, anybody know who this guy is? Scottie Pippen, very good. Let's see if anybody knows who the next one is here. That was a little bit harder. Anybody recognize that one? B.J. Armstrong, there we go. And this one's a little bit easier. See if anybody knows who this one is. Horace Grant, there we go. We got some young people jumping in on this. There's a lot of people that argue if Michael was the best, or if Kobe was the best, or if LeBron is the best, or Wilt Chamberlain, or Kareem, or, you know, all these different people. But regardless of who you think is the best player of all time, one thing that is true is that Michael Jordan was great, but he did not become a champion and achieve his goal until he became a team player. Right now, a lot of you are like, what in the world does this have to do with Philemon? Nothing. I just like talking about the Bulls. not a whole lot you can say about them nowadays. But most of us are kind of like Michael in that we know that we need others. Like, we know that we have certain goals in life or certain responsibilities in life, and we know we shouldn't try to do all of it on our own. But we still end up doing a lot of life on our own. We still end up trying to accomplish the things that we've been given to do with this childlike mentality. Like a child when they come to you when they're real young and they said, Mommy, look what I did. I did it all myself. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. You've heard him say it. I did it all by myself. And a lot of times that's the approach that many of us take to spiritual responsibilities that God has given to us. Most of us are pretty good about being in church on Sundays, or pretty good about being friendly to other people while we're here. But the rest of our life is kind of spent in the same way that Michael Jordan spent those first five seasons in the NBA. Like, we have some flashes of genius, some flashes of victory, or we have some bursts of success, but for the most part, we still haven't won the championship. We haven't achieved the goals that we have been reaching for, and we're left a lot of times with questions. A lot of times we have doubts, frustrations. We get tired very easily. We have scars from our past and even real pain in the future. And while we try hard, we still are left wondering what to do. We listen on Sundays. We sometimes take notes and we go back and try to read that passage for ourselves. And we pray and we try to do it all right, but we still struggle. If we were to take a survey of everyone that calls the Grace Baptist Church their church home, I think we would find that those of us that struggle, the common denominator among those that struggle the most is isolation. I think if we were to take that survey, we would find out that the common denominator as to why we struggle the most is because we're trying to do things by ourselves. Basketball is not the only thing that was designed in such a way that teamwork is required in order to see victory. And we're going to see that in the book of Philemon. We did a series in this book back in June, I think it was. And some of you right now are thinking, are you just going to rehash one of those sermons? And that would be nice, and I wouldn't have to prepare anything all week. And I could do it, but that's not what we're going to do. We're going to look at it from a different angle. But in the book of Philemon, we're not going to talk about it from the perspective that we took last time, which was conflict resolution. The title of that series was, Oh No, You Didn't. And we went for it from that perspective. But we're going to look at it a little bit different this time. The Apostle Paul is the one that wrote this passage. And I want you to think about Paul. Before Paul was Paul, anybody remember what his name was? Saul. And Saul got saved on the road to Damascus. He was a persecutor of the churches, the persecutor of the people that followed this Jesus. And he's on his way to Damascus to persecute the believers that are there. And on his way, the Bible says that a light shone round about him. And Jesus literally comes down and talks face to face with the Apostle Paul. He wasn't the apostle at the time, he was Saul. But anyway, he talks to him and Saul gets saved right there. Like, he sees Jesus and he realizes Jesus is who he said he is. He is the Son of God. He died on the cross, and 3 days later he rose from the dead, and I'm looking at him right now like he's alive. I've been wrong. He's right. And he believes the gospel at that moment. And one thing that we easily overlook is what happened first after he got saved. The very first lesson that the Apostle Paul learned after his salvation was that he would not be able to live the Christian life by himself. Because remember, when he got saved, he wasn't able to what? He wasn't able to see because of the blindness of the light that had come in. He was blinded by the light. And I never knew what the next words are to that song. What are the next words to that song? Blinded by the light. Wake up like a deuce, another road. First service didn't get that, all right? But anyway, how many of you guys know what song I'm talking about? That's going to be in your head the rest of the day. I'm sorry. He was blinded by the light, and that's where the song came from. And after that, he's not able to see, and God gives him an instruction. And what was the instruction? Someone is going to have to lead you to where you're going. He wasn't able to do it on his own. He had a job, he had a responsibility, and he could not do it alone. He had to have somebody go along with him. And we see that that was not a one-time thing for the Apostle Paul, but it was a lifetime thing for him until he died. Every time you see Paul, he's always with somebody else. I mean, stop and think about it. Paul and Timothy. Paul and Barnabas. Paul and Silas, Paul and Epaphroditus, Paul, I mean, we could keep going because every time he writes a letter, he's like, I, the apostle Paul, salute you with Timothy and with, you know, all these other people that he's with all the time. And he's like, salute this person and say hello to that person and make sure that person brings me my coat and my writings and those kinds of things. He's all the time surrounded by other believers. And so he learned very early on that he could not do this on his own. We see this happening in the book of Philemon as well. If you were here earlier this summer, then you know the other two characters in this passage. One of them is the person that it's written to, Philemon. He was a Christian man, but he owned slaves. And he had a slave by the name of Onesimus. Onesimus had run away from him. And Onesimus ends up in prison. He's in prison by this guy named Paul. Paul leads Onesimus to Christ. Paul tells Onesimus, we need to make things right. So Paul writes a letter for Onesimus to deliver back to his slave owner, guy Philemon, and that's what this book is that you're holding in your lap. It's the letter that Paul wrote on behalf of Onesimus. We're not going to dive into all of the stories that are in that part of it because we discussed that for 3 weeks in a row. But there's a whole different group of people that we totally overlooked in the month of June that's written about in the book of Philemon. It's a group of people that most of us don't even recognize are even there. We just think there's three characters. There's Paul, there's Philemon, and there's Onesimus. But there's another group of people that I would call Paul's fellows, if you will. And you'll understand what I mean by saying that by looking at verse number one where it starts out and he says this. Verse number one, it says, Paul, a prisoner of Jesus Christ, and Timothy, our brother, unto Philemon, our dearly beloved and fellow laborer. So who is his fellow laborer here? Philemon. Not only was Philemon his fellow laborer, but if you skip down to verse number 24, he says this, Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, Luke, my fellow laborers. We see him use this word a couple of times in this passage, and we see that Paul was not able to achieve the championship, if you will, like Michael Jordan. He wasn't able to do life without having, number one, fellow laborers. All of us need fellow laborers. And what fellow laborers are, they're the people that come alongside of us to work with us. It's someone to work with. In verse number one, he used this word to describe Philemon. In verse 24, he used it to describe four other men. And if you look throughout the New Testament, this word is used to describe at least 13 different people that the Apostle Paul was working alongside of. He said, you look at everything that I've been able to accomplish. Paul was used by God to write much of the New Testament. He was able to establish many churches, lead a lot of people to Christ. But he said, I couldn't have done it without these people that were working alongside of me. This word fellow laborer literally means a companion in work. We need people that'll work alongside of us. How many guys, whenever you're doing a job, sometimes it's nice to do it on your own. You know, you can put the headphones in and you just get it done. But there's some jobs you need help with. It's heavy. You can't do it on your own. It's nice having somebody to work alongside of you. I'll never forget a time where I went hunting for the first time. Now, we discussed this last week. It's not hunting, it's hunting, right? Are we with that? Everybody on the same page there? And if you're an animal lover and don't like hunting, just close your ears for the next few minutes, all right? But I went hunting for the first time. It was October the 1st of 2009, and I had never been hunting in my life. Like, my dad didn't hunt, and no one ever taught me to hunt, but I had been on YouTube, and I learned how to hunt on YouTube. I'm serious. That's how I learned. No one ever showed me how to field dress a deer, but I did watch a YouTube video, and I stayed at Holiday Inn Express the night before. And so I went out into the field, and they said, if you're going to hunt with a bow, and I had to get a bow, so I got on Craigslist, and I bought a bow, the case, arrows, everything, $100. That was it. And I was just a redneck up in a tree, all right? And they said, if you're going to hunt with a bow, only about 3 out of 10 bow hunters actually get a deer every year. And so not only am I a redneck, but I'm a tight light wad. And I was like, I'm not going to spend $20 and $30 on a knife to field dress a deer if I'm not even going to shoot one. But I thought, in case I do get one, I need to be prepared. So I took a box cutter with me, like a razor blade. And not even like the razor blade, like you push the little thing up and it goes. I'm talking like the cheap one, like whenever it gets dull, you break the end piece off. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, like the ones you get at the dollar store. I took that with me, the field dress one, in case I got it. Well, I'm up in the tree, October 1st, 2009, and God sends a doe right out in front of me. And I couldn't believe it. 1 hour into the first time I ever went hunting. And I remember being at full draw on that deer, and it was so surreal. How many of you guys have ever been deer hunting before? I mean, this 2 weeks in a row, we're sharing deer hunting stories. This is right up you guys' alley, all right? And so some of you are like, you're talking basketball and hunting? I am out. I'm never coming to this place again, all right? But anyway, I'm sorry, but just carry on. And so I'm at full draw, and I'm thinking, man, this is so surreal. I can't believe I'm about to shoot this deer. And I had no one had taught me how to hunt, and I didn't understand that if the deer is quartered towards you, then you're supposed to aim a little bit different so you hit the vitals. I just aimed at the spot that they always told me to aim at, and I hit it, bam, and I was like, yes, I got it. Well, because it was angled, it kind of came out in a different spot, and I'll spare you the details of all that, but it ran off about 300 yards. And as soon as I shot it, I was like, I can't believe I just shot this deer. And there was a little spike buck right behind it. And I thought, I'm going to get two of them in one day, you know? And so he's looking right at me. He saw something coming. So I reach down, I grab another arrow, and I'm trying to put it on there without him seeing me move it. And I start to go, and about right here, he takes off running. I was like, man. So anyway, I end up finding this deer. It's about 300 yards away. And so I get it, and it's about somewhere between 130 and 230 pounds is probably about what it was. Every year it gets bigger, all right? I'm not sure if you know it when you tell stories, it does get bigger every year. And so I drag this deer 300 yards to a fence, and then I had to lift it up over the fence because I couldn't get my vehicle across the fence. So I lifted this deer. I mean, you guys ever drug dead weight like that before? I mean, it's tough. So I throw it up over the fence, and then I had to put it in the back of our minivan. And so, true story, it was a minivan. It had blood spots in the back of it until we sold that sucker, 1999 green Dodge Caravan. And I stuck it up in there, its hoof sticking straight up. I get home to the garage, and what are you going to do? It's October 1st. It's warm out, and I couldn't field dress, or I field dress it, but I couldn't process it right away. Someone was going to help me with that later in the day. And so I didn't know what to do, so we have a refrigerator in our garage, so I pulled all the drawers out of it, and I stuffed it like up inside the refrigerator. I felt like a serial killer, just like stuck it in there, you know. And called my mom. I told her, she actually came over, and we decided I was going to take it to a friend's house so he could skin it for me. And so I remember dragging that deer, and I got it over to the back of the minivan again right there in my driveway, and I grab all four of its hooves like this, and I'm lifting it up to put it in the back of the van, and it's not quite up high enough. And so I'm like, I got to go low. So I went to stretch just a little bit. And when I did, my back, I mean, it gave out. How many of you guys ever had your back go out? I never had that happen. And I was like, oh, this is a problem. So I dropped the deer in the middle of the driveway behind the van hatch up. The neighbors, I'm sure, are going crazy at this point. And I'm walking down, and I walk down into the basement, and I lay down on the floor and go, I think I hurt my back. I said, I don't think I can get up. I'm a grown man, 30 years old, and my mom looks at me. She says, son, don't move because you might paralyze yourself. I was like, what? She said, I'm calling an ambulance. I said, no, you're not. You're not calling the ambulance, mom. I'm fine. It's okay. So she called the ambulance. The ambulance shows up. It's Tremont Rescue. It's like people we know are like, are you okay? Like, what happened? It's like, I don't want to talk about it, but my back hurts, and my mom's making me go to the hospital. So anyway, I end up going to the hospital. They pumped me full of drugs for like 2 weeks, and I felt amazing. And so, you know, the whole story, basically, all of that could have been avoided if I would have just had someone, what? Help. I had people inside. I mean, my wife wouldn't have helped. There's no way. She was grabbing a hoof of a deer and throwing it up in there, you know. But there were other people in there that could have just given me that little helping hand. But because I wanted to do it all by myself, it ended up leading to more problems. Let me ask you. You've got a responsibility that God's given you. Some of you have the responsibility of being a spouse. Some of you have the responsibility of being a parent. You have responsibilities at work. You have a responsibility to witness to people around you. I mean, you have a responsibility to walk with God. Like, the stuff that God's given you to do, like, who is it that's helping you? Who is it that's working alongside of you to be a better parent or to walk with God or make life's big decisions? We need that person. Not only do we need fellow laborers, but look at verse number 2. He says, and to our beloved Apphia and Archippus, our fellow soldier, and to the church in thy house. Not only did he have a fellow laborer, but number 2, we need fellow soldiers. Not just people to work with us, but people to fight with us. And some of you right now are like, I'm a good Baptist. I fight with everybody. And that's not what we're talking about here. By fighting with them, what I mean is we're fighting alongside of them. Whenever we look at this, he says Archippus was a fellow soldier. And as far as I can tell, there's only one other person in the New Testament that Paul calls a fellow soldier, and it was a guy by the name of Epaphroditus. Do you notice here that the people that he worked with was 13, but the people that he fought alongside of was how many? Only 2 people. See how the number dwindled very quickly, because this was an intimate relationship that he had with these men so that they could fight alongside of one another. It's one thing to work by yourself, trying to lift something heavy or trying to go for a long period of time. It's one thing to work by yourself. It's a whole other thing to fight by yourself. Because when you talk about fighting, work is just trying to get a job done. When you're fighting, sometimes you're fighting for your life. And a lot of times as Christians, we forget that there is an enemy out there. And the enemy is after us. 1 Peter 5 says that the devil is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And we need people that will help us to remember that we're engaged in a battle. And we need people that will come alongside of us in the middle of that battle. You know, it's nice to know that someone has your back. You know, they have your 6. To know you're not in it alone. Who is it that you fight alongside of? Who is it that when you're having marriage problems, they come alongside of you and help you win that fight? Not win the fight, but you know what I'm saying. Who is it that you put your heads together with when you have a wayward child? Who is it that is engaging the enemy on their knees in prayer for your most secret and important prayer requests? Who is it that picks you up when you get knocked down? Who is it that helps you fight addiction, a poor attitude, or sin? Who is it that fights alongside of you? Not only that, but look what he says in verse number 23. He says, there salute thee Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus. Do you see these fellows? He had someone that was working with him. He had someone that was fighting with him. But number 3, this fellow prisoner was someone that was suffering with him. Not only was there Epaphras, but there were 3 other people in the New Testament that are called fellow prisoners. There's Andronicus, Junia, and Aristarchus. And these 4 men were people that were right alongside of Paul when he was hurting for the sake of the gospel. As a matter of fact, the book of Philemon, he says, Paul, a prisoner of Christ. The reason in verse number 1 he says that is because he's literally writing it from prison. And we believe that these fellow prisoners literally were fellow prisoners. They were doing time in the clink with Paul. They did a nickel with him. You know what I'm saying? Some of you guys that have been in the pen know what I'm talking about. But anyway, we'll share our prison tattoos later on, all right? But this is what was going on. This is who he's doing life with. And these are people that he was suffering alongside of. You know, these are the people that were held captive with them. They suffered with them. Who is it that is suffering with you? Like when you start to hurt emotionally, spiritually, when you're struggling with depression or anxiety, when you feel like you've failed or you've lost a loved one, when you feel like life has been unfair and you've been mistreated, when you feel like God doesn't even seem to care about where you are, or you wonder if he's even real. Who is it that comes alongside of you during that time of suffering and they suffer along with you? I can think back to a few times in my life to where I was going through some heavy stuff. I pull out my phone and I knew I needed to talk to someone. And there's a handful of people I knew that if I called them, not only would they answer their phone, but they would be there for me. And they would encourage me in my suffering. Who's doing that for you? Ultimately, this is where we have to recognize that none of us were designed to work alone, to fight alone, or to suffer alone. And when we attempt to go through life alone, it does not make us spiritual, and it does not make us strong. It makes us vulnerable. When you look at Paul and everything that he went through, the reason that Paul was able to say that he finished his course, that he fought to the end, the reason he was able to say that was because he wasn't doing it alone. He had people that were working with him, fighting with him, and suffering with him. Who is it that's doing that for us? Listen, you're not spiritual because you just put your nose to the grind and you can do it on your own. You're being ignorant. And I'm sorry if that hurts your little feelings, snowflake, but I'll just be honest with you. If you're thinking that you can do it on your own and you think you're spiritual because of it, you are mistaken. And if you think you are strong because you can do it on your own, you are mistaken and you are in a vulnerable position. You need others. Listen, if the Apostle Paul needed people, what makes us think that we don't? I mean, think about Jesus. Jesus needed 12 apostles, and of the 12, he had three that were like his favorite ones, you know what I'm saying? And one that was even real special to him. And so we recognize if Jesus needed others, Paul needed others, then what makes us think that we are any different? This is where the rubber meets the road, because I've got to be transparent with you today. As your pastor, I am concerned. Because we've been able to experience growth at Grace, and I'm thankful for that. Usually in the summer, there's a slump as far as the attendance and those kinds of things with vacations and games and everything going on. But over the last 3 months, May, June, and July, our average attendance has been 291 people on Sunday mornings. And I'm excited. I'm thankful for that, how God has allowed so many people to be a part of Grace and so many people that are serving the Lord here and being ministered to here. But the thing that concerns me is that We're not in the game to fill these pews. The reason, I didn't mean to say in the game. The reason we're ministering, the reason we're doing what we're doing is because we recognize that all of us need a place not just to worship, but also to connect and to serve. And so the numbers that we measure are not just Sunday morning attendance, but there's another number that's more important to me. And that number is that of the 291 average attendance on Sunday mornings throughout the summer, only 30% of our people are connected to a life group. That means that 7 out of every 10 people that you're surrounded by this morning are not connected with anyone else in our church through a small group. Now, when I say that, I'm not trying to guilt you guys into anything. I just need to just declare what's going on. And I recognize that when I say that 7 out of 10 are not connected to a life group, I recognize also that just because someone is not in a life group, it does not mean that they are not connected. I recognize that some of you are not in a life group, but you have some strong Christians that you are surrounded by. And you are working with them, and they are working with you. You are fighting alongside of them, and you are suffering alongside of one another, and you are doing life with other believers. And for that, I applaud you. You do not have to go through a life group in order to be right with God, okay? But what we recognize is that most people are not seeking out these kinds of relationships on their own. And so what we've tried to do is establish the easiest way for people to be able to get connected to other believers so that we can do life in community. I also recognize that some of us, or some of you are unable to be a part of a life group because of your work schedule. You're unable to be a part of a life group because of the distance that you live from the church or because of transportation issues. Additionally, I also understand that we as a church leadership have not made it easy for you to be connected to a small group. The reason I say that is because we only have one group that meets on Sunday mornings, and that's our senior group. All of our other groups meet on Wednesday nights at 6:45. And we recognize that for some of you, neither one of those will work. We recognize that we've had a limited number of options when it comes to life groups. And we recognize that because of the limited number of opportunities, sometimes it's awkward to go into a new group and all those people like really know each other and they're connected and you're the new guy walking in or the new lady walking in and you're like, I just feel really awkward and really strange right now. We recognize those things. So we've been spending, for the last 6 months, we've been spending time researching and discussing what to do about these problems. And we've, the pastoral staff, and then we brought in Sean Trainer. He helped, and Pastor Jeremy, when he was living here before he moved and accepted that position in Indiana, he came along and helped us. Over these last 6 months, we've been discussing what can we do to make connection easier for the people of Grace. And so after much discussion and prayer, we've developed a plan that I think is going to make it as easy as possible to get connected to a life group at Grace. As of right now, we have 5 active adult life groups. Starting the week of September 8th, which will be the week after Labor Day, we will be adding 6 new life groups. All of you mathematicians out there, that brings us to a total of 11. So instead of only having 5 available life groups, we're going to have 11 life groups. And I'm excited about it because not only are we adding life groups, but we're adding different types of life groups. We're going to have a group that's specifically for couples. We're going to have a group specifically for men, a group specifically for young adults, single or young couples. We're going to have another group specifically for ladies. And then a new group that I'm excited about is called a commuters group, because we recognize that a lot of people that come to our church come from longer distances, and it's really hard to come back to the church for a small group. And so we have one group that is going to meet right after the first service at 10:30. They'll start their life group for the people that are commuters, because we have a number of people that live more than 30 minutes away from our church. In order to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, we are going to have to make a significant change. And if you've been around here for any amount of time and gotten to know the way that I lead, I am a foot dragger. Anybody, you know what I'm talking about when I say dragging your feet? I make very, very slow decisions. And I think that Pastor Andrew and Mark have both known like the direction that we need to go, but I have been very slow in making this decision because I don't want to make snap decisions and regret it later on. So we try to look at it from every single perspective that we could. And so after six months of looking at those different things, we have decided that the significant change that's going to have to take place is that after Labor Day, we will no longer be having our 6 p.m. evening services. And the reason we're changing that is so that we can make more opportunities for connection through life groups. The evening services have been really good lately. And to be very honest with you, we've tried everything that we can think of to try to make them more attractional, you know. But we haven't seen that number grow up. The quality of the service has been amazing. Pastor Mark, whatever you want to call him, PM, we'll call him PM. PM has been doing a good job leading the worship. He does it a little bit differently than normal on Sunday nights. And then he's been getting different people to give their testimonies and share what God's doing in their lives. And it's been very helpful to the people that have been a part of that evening service. And so because the evening services have been as good as they've been, this is not a decision that we have made lightly. So rather than having a 6 p.m. service, we're going to start offering 4 new life groups during that time. And so by making this change, it's going to give us more group options. It's going to give us more group times. It's going to give the opportunity for people that just can't come on Wednesdays to connect to a life group still. Or the people that serve on Wednesdays in our children's ministries, they'll be able to be a part of a life group as well. This is going to eliminate our space issues, and it's going to give more opportunities to serve, more opportunities to lead, more leadership training, and also more opportunities to invite friends and family to different times of the week. We're going to make this change on a trial basis. What that means is we're not going to make this a long-term decision. We are going to make it, and we are going to evaluate how it goes through Easter. Right before Easter, we're going to reevaluate this and see if it's something that we need to continue to do or go in a different direction, because we want to continue to move forward and not just do things because that's what everyone else does, and we don't want to do things just because it's what we've always done. We want to try to do everything we can do, short of sin, to help people worship God, connect to others, and serve both. So by making this change, our goal is to see that number that I gave you earlier increased. Instead of 3 out of 10 people that are connecting to a life group, we believe that 10 out of 10 people need to be connected to other believers. For many of us, that means it needs to be through a life group. And so we want to see real connection taking place in those groups. We don't want anyone to be a part of a life group that you don't want to be involved in. We want you to fall so in love with the people that you're doing life with, knowing that these people are working with me, these people are suffering with me, these people are fighting alongside of me, that you just can't wait to come to life group. Now, for some of you, think that would be nice to have something like that, and we're going to do the best we can to create an environment that will produce that. The way we're going to do that is with these small groups, they're going to be semester-based. What that means is when we start with these new groups in September, they will only go through December. So it'll be about a three-month period. And what that does is it allows you the opportunity to try a group out. The first 3 weeks, try whichever ones you want. And then whichever one you decide to try, you stay with it just through December. And if you like it, you can stay. If you don't like it, ditch them. You didn't like them anyway, right? And go on to the next one. And then we'll start a new semester in January that will run through March. So each one of them will only go for 3 months at a time. So it gives you a natural out if you don't feel like you're connecting with your group. Not only that, but all of the new groups will be sermon-based. What that means is that all of these new groups will basically go over the material that we cover on Sunday mornings. I grew up going to church where you went Sunday school, then you had Sunday morning, then you had Sunday night, and then you had Wednesday night. So that meant there were four different topics, four different sets of truths, four different practical applications, and you're trying to put all of that stuff into practice in your life. Good luck. It's hard to do all those things. So what we're doing is we're going to have a main emphasis on Sunday mornings, and then we're going to try to go deeper with it through our life groups. And each one of those will be a little bit different because some of them will be couples and they'll have children. Others will be seniors and they have grandchildren, or others will be singles and they don't have any children, you know, wherever it may be. And the discussion will go according to the group that has gotten together. And so here's a list of the groups that we're going to have. We're actually going to give all of you guys a copy of this on your way out today. The ushers will have those for you. But the ones at the top here are the groups that we currently have. And some of you have been, 3 out of every 10 of you are currently in a life group, and we're going to go Obamacare on you for a minute. All right, is everybody okay with that? Can we go Obamacare? Some of you are like, oh, yeah, yeah, yes, we can. And the others are like, no, no way. Anyway, we're going Obamacare. What I mean by that is if you like your life group, you can keep your life group, right? How many of you guys heard that with the Obamacare thing, right? If you like your insurance or your provider, you can keep it. Anyway, I'm not getting political. So what we see is that current life groups, John and Allison lead the doctrines group, and it's a mixed group. What that means is they're all weird. That's basically what that means, mixed. And mixed just means it's not just for singles, it's not just for couples, it's not just for old people, it's not just for young people, it's for anyone who wants to be a part of it. And so that's John's group. They meet on Wednesdays at 6:45. The Horner's group, Cornerstone, they're a mixed group as well. They meet on Wednesdays. The Sedlicks is a mixed group. They meet on Wednesdays. Line Gang, that's my mother. She has the ladies group Wednesdays at 6:45 called Women at the Well. And I pointed out to her this morning that I thought that was a funny name for a group. Do you guys think that's a funny name for a group? Because you guys remember the woman at the well? Anybody know anything about the woman at the well? You ought to look at that and then decide if you want to be a part of that class or not. All right? The couples, this is a new group that we're going to start. The Lenders are going to be leading a couples group on Wednesdays at 6:45. The Edwards will continue their senior group at 9:15 on Sunday mornings. The Mitchells, they drive 45 minutes to church on Sunday mornings, and it's difficult for them to come back on Sunday nights and Wednesdays. So they're actually going to start a commuters group. And what that means is if you drive from farther out, or if you just don't want to have to come back at another time, but you want to be a part of a life group, then you can attend the first service and then go right into that commuters group at 10:30 on Sunday mornings. And so then you don't have to come back to the church at another time during the week. My wife will be starting a ladies group on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. The Goaways will be leading a young adults group. That one is for singles or couples, anybody that wants to come in, just young adults. It says 20s, but if you're not in your 20s, but you feel like you are, you're welcome to come to that as well. It'll actually be at the Goaways home in Tremont. You can drop your kids off here at the church for childcare and then head over there to the house if you'd like to be a part of that. And then the Trainers will have a group as well on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock. That will be a mixed group, and that's for anyone that wants to be a part of that. Just to make sure that you understand a couple of questions, nothing is going to change as far as the children's ministry on Wednesday nights. We'll still have our teen ministry, the Grace 412. They'll meet on Wednesday nights. That's for 7th through 12th grade. The Engage group, which is 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, they'll continue to meet 6:45 on Wednesdays. And the Grace Kids, or the Kids for Christ, they'll meet, that's 3 years old through 3rd grade. They'll continue to meet on Wednesdays at 6:45 as well. But what we want to do is we want to try to create the easiest pathway possible for you to be able to get connected to someone else. Because let me just ask you this. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing spiritually? Like, don't answer that out loud. But I asked in the first service, how are you doing spiritually? And someone sitting right there in the front row goes, meh. And it wasn't a teenager. That's what my teenagers say. How are you doing? Meh. Like, how do you spell that? M-E-H. That's how you spell that. Meh. But, I mean, really, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing spiritually? The answer to that question is often answered. It's often determined by the people with which we're connected. And a lot of us don't have that spiritual influence that we need. People that are fellow laborers or fellow soldiers and fellow prisoners. Life groups are our primary means of connecting, but they are not the only way to connect. And if you are not able to be in a small group that's conducted through our church, can I encourage you? Find a group of people. Like if you say, well, I just can't do any of those things, or you just say, I don't really want to do any of those things, I want to encourage you to find someone that you work with or someone in your neighborhood or someone that you're related to that you can get together with on a regular basis and do life with them, because you cannot do it on your own. You can keep doing the Michael Jordan thing in the 80s if you want to, but you're not going to win any championships. You're not going to have lasting victory. We need our teammates. Michael Jordan needed Scottie Pippen and B.J. Armstrong and Horace Grant and Steve Kerr and John Paxson, and some of you are thinking some of the other names of the guys on there. Bill Cartwright. Anybody got any other ones that were on that team there? Dennis Rodman. Oh, yeah, I can't forget him. Oh, yeah. There were some good ones on there. And, you know, it's because of those guys that they were able to win the championship. And so just as he needed them, we need others as well. And let's be honest, you know this. But you know as well that relationships are usually pretty messy, aren't they? Because where there's people, there's problems. And how many of you say, I've got some issues? You know, we all have issues, all right? Some of you, we know about them, all right? You're on Facebook too much, and you need to stop posting about it, all right? But anyway, we've all got issues, and when you start to do life with people, it gets messy. And that's one of the reasons oftentimes we kind of avoid that. But can I just challenge you to recognize that you know you need to get connected? You know you want to get connected. There's something inside of you that's saying, we need to try this. Now is the time. And so what I want to ask you to do today is I want to ask you to make a commitment. I'm not going to ask you to make a commitment to be a part of a group. I'm just going to ask you to make a commitment to pray about being a part of a group. And on the way out, they're going to give you one of these papers that has all the groups on there. And all I'm asking of you today is, will you commit to seriously pray about which of these life groups you should consider attending? That's all we're asking. And in the weeks to come, if you decide that you want to be a part of one, we want to invite you to jump in on it. But I believe that the decision that you make in regards to this moving forward has incredible potential for some of us. For some of us, we've been treading water for way too long. For some of us, we've been trying to do it on our own for way too long. I just want to encourage you to jump in and find some real friends here. Not just friends that you can, you know, hang out with. We had a life group meeting last night. We all went to John Tharp's house and cooked on the grill. Actually, he cooked all the food for us, which was really cool. We brought our own meat, and he cooked it on the grill. And I love just sitting there critiquing him the whole time that he cooked them. You know what he did with the hamburgers? Before they were done, he pushed them down with the thing and got all the grease out of them. Who does that? You guys raising your hand, you bunch of rookies. You don't know what you're doing, all right? I'm just kidding. But we had a great time. We had a great time at Life Group just hanging out with one another. But I want to encourage you to be seriously praying about what the Lord would have you to do in regards to connecting to others, finding someone to work with, someone to fight with, and someone to suffer with. Let's pray together.
Thank you again for joining us for today's podcast. If you have any questions about today's message or would just like more information about Grace, you can email us at info@experiencegrace.church. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and to subscribe to our channel for more messages just like this one.